This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivisodhi. Across the world, 290 million people are unaware that they're living with viral hepatitis. And to commemorate World Hepatitis Day, which happened yesterday, we'll take a look at how we can improve screening and treatment to reduce the number of undiagnosed viral hepatitis cases in Malaysia, and whether a hepatitis-free future is closer than it seems. And that seems to be the WHO's theme for World Hepatitis Day, a hepatitis-free future. On the line with me, Dr. Tan Sok Siam. She's a senior consultant hepatologist from Hospital Selayang. We're going to be finding out a lot more from her as to where Malaysia is this World Hepatitis Day. Welcome to the show, Sok Siam. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Meera.
You know, while there are five main types of hepatitis viruses. We know there's hepatitis A, B, C, D, and E. The ones of concern in Malaysia that we hear most about would be hepatitis B and C. You know, Dr. Sok Siam, why is it hepatitis B and C seem to be considered a public health concern in Malaysia?
Actually, hepatitis B and C of the five are the ones that can cause chronic diseases. So that's why we can see the burden of hepatitis B and C, because they are chronic in Malaysia compared to hepatitis A, E, which are actually not chronic.
And is there a reason why it's so prevalent as well?
Well, hepatitis B, it is in Malaysia and as well in most part of this region, is transmitted through mother to child at birth or at around first year of age. So it is a chronic disease and it is a common disease. Whereas for hepatitis C, in our part of the world, is mainly driven by injection drug use. And if we have prevalent population of people with injection drug use, then it is a prevalent disease as well.
You know, earlier on I spoke about how 290 million people in the world are unaware that they're living with viral hepatitis. Would we roughly know the number in Malaysia who are unaware that they are living with hepatitis?
Actually, for hepatitis C, the estimated number of people with hepatitis C is about 2.5% of the adult population in 2009, and that is by mathematical modelling. But subsequently, last year in Malaysia, the Ministry of Health, in partnership with various organisations, had actually tested people in a World Hepatitis campaign last year, tested about more than 11,000 people, and they found that 1.9% of them were positive for the antibody. So briefly, we think we have about between 1.9 to 2.5% of the adult population has viral hepatitis C, chronic hepatitis C. And of this, we know that not everybody with the antibody against hepatitis C has active disease. So based on another study, we think that we have about 380,000 people with active hepatitis C in Malaysia.
Okay, so 380,000 in hepatitis C. What about hepatitis B?
Hepatitis B, we do not know the actual number that we have. The numbers of hepatitis B in Malaysia are actually present in the older population, because in 1989, we have universal vaccination of the newborn. So if you look at those who are less than 5 years old, the number of hepatitis B is certainly very less than 1%, which means we have achieved the target that's set for our country. But we still have a lot of hepatitis B patients. I cannot remember the number exactly in the older age group in Malaysia.
Okay, so we're doing very well as far as hepatitis B is concerned. It's part of the National Immunization Program, and it's been the case since 1989, as you mentioned.
Correct.
And I think what I'm very curious about is the fact that, you know, Malaysia fought for Sofosbuvir, which is the treatment for hepatitis C. And we sort of went through quite a lot of hassle, actually, to get the compulsory licensing to obtain Sofosbuvir, the generic version of it. I mean, we managed to slash the price from 360,000 for a full course of treatment of the original drug to just 1,248 for the generic version through the government use or compulsory license. Now, that was a huge achievement for the people of Malaysia. Now, if you say that we have about 380,000 people with hepatitis C, however, the rate, the take-up rate for this treatment is terribly low. It's like less than 10% of Malaysians living with Hep C are aware that they're infected, while only 17% of those with Hep B have been diagnosed. Now, the take-up rate for the treatment for Hep C is also very low. How do we tackle this problem? It's a shame because it's accessible and it's given by government for free, but people are still not coming forward. Dr. Tan, would you shed more light on that and what we can do better?
Okay. Actually, in terms of treatment coverage, it is actually dependent on diagnosis and linkage to care. It helps, of course, to have affordable treatment, but we also need to find the people with hepatitis C and connect them to treatment. So I think what we need to do is to increase and maintain a heightened level of awareness of the danger of hepatitis and the good treatment, which is free in Malaysia. Actually, awareness and education about hepatitis will create demand for the viral hepatitis service. So a person living with hepatitis B and C may not know it, but he or she may come into contact at various levels of healthcare. For example, I have one lady who actually got herself tested by chance when she brought her husband for his usual clinic appointment on the same day that we offered free testing during our previous Hepatitis Day event. So we need more outreach testing and screening all year round. And I think another thing that we should do is to enlist the help of the public with clear messages what to do. We can have tool for self-assessment of risk. And if one has risk, to come forward for testing. The test for hepatitis B or C is actually a simple blood test, but the process could be improved by recognizing the need of the specific setting. For example, we can have reflex testing. So instead of two steps testing, we modify to make it one step. We can use point of care testing to test and treat at one visit, or use other means like dry blood spots when the transport of the liquid blood specimen is an issue. So actually, there's a lot of things we can do to find more people with viral hepatitis in order for us to link them to care and make them suitable for treatment, available for treatment, and to cure them.
So the ways in which to close the gap between testing and treatment would very much be through outreach programs. You mentioned something about people who are at risk. Who are people at risk for hepatitis B and C?
Well, hepatitis B, most of our patients with hepatitis B does not have a risk behavior. Most of them have the transmission, the infection through mother to child at birth or at around 1 year of age. So they do not necessarily have the high-risk behavior. What they may have is another family member with hepatitis B or another family member with liver cancer when the hepatitis B was diagnosed very late. Whereas for hepatitis C, there are a whole host of risk factors, but the most common one is injection drug use. In the past, even one-time use, one time of sharing needle, if it's an infected needle, is a risk factor for hepatitis C infection. Other risk factors are like blood transfusion in the past, before we screened for hepatitis C, so like before 1994, or organ transplant before 1994. And other risk factors are patients who had dialysis and also those who had tattoos or ear piercing in the past when the facilities to do that are not very clean.
I did mention that about less than 10% of Malaysians live with hepatitis C are aware. that they are infected, while only 17% of those with hepatitis B have been diagnosed. What is the danger of having so many people with undiagnosed hepatitis? Because the numbers of people who are aware are very, very small, actually.
Yeah, if they're not diagnosed, of course, they would not be able to, we cannot treat them. And therefore, they will continue to suffer from the disease. And I've seen terrible suffering from liver failure, liver cancer, and people, patients with liver disease are dying younger than they should. And therefore, in a way that in terms of the healthcare, we could not decrease the burden of liver disease in the healthcare system. And instead of having patients treated and diminishing the risk of dying from all these liver diseases, liver failure, liver cancer, we're going to see higher burden of people dying of liver cancer and liver cirrhosis as they age. So in other words, we will not be able to achieve all the goals of hepatitis elimination that WHO has set for 2030.
Okay, so you don't think we will be anywhere near those? What is our goal for 2030?
I'm not saying that we will not get there. We could get there because the disease itself, the viral hepatitis itself, the characteristic of the disease, they are reliable and also useful diagnostic and treatment, and we know what to do. Therefore, it's actually feasible to eliminate viral hepatitis as a public health threat. The only thing is we need to treat more people to get us there.
And the goal for 2030 is to be hepatitis free by WHO?
Actually, it is to diagnose about 90% of the people with viral hepatitis. And also for those who are eligible for treatment, we should actually treat 80% of them and therefore try to reduce the number of new cases by 90% and to decrease the mortality from viral hepatitis by 65%. Those are the goals for viral hepatitis elimination by 2030.
Okay, ambitious goals, but it is 10 years away, you never know, right? However, you know, we've had this whole pandemic come and hit us out of nowhere, and there seem to be increasing worries that numbers of viral hepatitis seem to be creeping up. We'll come back and find out more in this discussion on World Hepatitis Day, where we endeavour to be a hepatitis-free country, and we hope to live in a hepatitis-free future. Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living. I'm Meera Sevisodhi. On the line with me, Dr. Tan Sok Siam. She's a senior consultant hepatologist from Hospital Selayang. We are discussing a hepatitis-free future. It was World Hepatitis Day yesterday, and that is exactly what the theme is. So it's interesting that you have shared a lot of statistics, Dr. Tan, about hepatitis in Malaysia, viral hepatitis B and C being the most common or huge, or rather a bigger public health concern in Malaysia. You know, I was thinking about COVID-19. It has come and hit us. However, I also have read that there are increasing worries that our numbers, hepatitis numbers, seem to be creeping back up. How are you coping to provide necessary healthcare services for your patients while also sort of keeping them safe? Because there is still a huge concern about coming to hospitals, right? Has that affected, and what have you seen happening at Hospital Selayang?
Yeah, as in any services, I think inevitably our service has been affected. During the movement control order, there were difficulties for our patients to come to clinic, especially those from out of state. So what we did was actually we did a lot of phone consults for many of our more stable clinic patients. We interview our patients through the phone and we arrange for their medications if they have no problems, and the medications are delivered by the post-largu system, and we make follow-up appointments. So you're right, inevitably we have treated less hepatitis patients, but now our services are back to the new normal. And our doors are open to treat more viral hepatitis patients. So, but actually, the pandemic has its silver linings. The pandemic provides actually very useful insights on a new system for healthcare delivery. For instance, the phone consult or virtual clinics, and also it may strengthen our surveillance program, and also create new collaborations. So, with new collaborations, I actually managed to get involved in a study on the impact of COVID-19 on liver patients, and I would like to say that in chronic liver disease patients, especially those with liver cirrhosis or hardening of the liver, COVID-19 actually exposed them to a more severe disease and with higher risk of bad outcome. So patients with chronic liver disease, especially those with hardening of the liver, are vulnerable. And they must remember that physical distancing, hand hygiene, and masking are very important for them.
With the disruption during COVID-19 of, you know, having access or wanting to come forward for treatment, now, if your treatment regime is disrupted for viral hepatitis, what happens?
So usually, they should not be disrupted. So what we can do, and a few of the things that we could do is by phone consult. And also, we make sure our patients get enough supply through post-laju, or sometimes, if possible, we would like to deliver medications or ask their family member to come to hospital to get the medications.
Okay. What's the worst thing that can happen if it's disrupted badly and you didn't come and get those medications?
It depends on at what stage of the treatment the patient is on. If it's towards the end, actually, sometimes we can still see very good results if the treatment is not completed and not many days are missed. And if it's in the early stage, then it is, of course, concerning. And we do not like that to happen. Therefore, we actually are very careful, and we always try to preempt. If there is a possibility, we will try our very best. The most important thing is to get medications through, which can be done through the post and all family members to collect the medicine. It has not happened to us yet that the patients could not have access to medications.
This year's theme for World Hepatitis Day under the WHO is a hepatitis-free future, but it has an emphasis on preventing mother-to-child transmission of hepatitis B. How do we eliminate mother-to-child transmission of hepatitis B?
Actually, the hepatitis-free future, it is, to me anyway, is about preventing hepatitis B infection among mothers and newborns, which is our future. So, In Malaysia, currently, we have hepatitis B vaccination of the newborn, and it is, of course, very successful. But if a mother, a pregnant woman with hepatitis B, has a very high viral load, there is still a 20% chance of transmitting the hepatitis B to the newborn, even with the 3 doses of vaccines. So there are other ways to decrease this risk. One of them is actually to test the mother, any pregnant mother who come into any antenatal service to test whether they have hepatitis B. If they have hepatitis B, then we need to look at the maternal viral load. If they have high viral load, then they could be treated with a hepatitis B medications at third trimester to decrease the maternal viral load. So when the baby is born at birth, their lower viral load, the risk of transmitting to the baby is actually lower. And also, baby born to mother with hepatitis B needs a quick jab of a hepatitis B immunoglobulin to quickly protect the baby on top of the 3 doses of hepatitis B vaccination. So there's a lot we could do when we know a pregnant woman has hepatitis B or not. We can do a lot to prevent the transmission to the baby. And we also can provide appropriate care to the mother. The mother could have very severe liver disease. Therefore, the mother needs treatment for herself. And also by knowing a woman of a childbearing age to whether she has hepatitis B, we also can use this information to trace and test her contacts, and some of them may need treatment as well.
And is how long will the vaccine last? Because our children get these this vaccination for hepatitis B when they're born. It's over 3 doses. But will that last forever?
Current study shows they last for a long time. So for as long as we have the vaccine already, we know that they can last. Although some patients may not, or some babies may not be able to do a seroconvert, and this could be because the mother already has hepatitis B, and therefore they are not protected. But from as far as we know, throughout the long history of providing this vaccination, the antibody can last for a long time.
And the uptake rate of this vaccine is pretty good in Malaysia, would you say?
Oh, yes. Very, very high percentage.
Okay. And is it mandatory for all mothers to test for hepatitis B in Malaysia?
Not at the moment.
Do you think it should?
I think if you want to enhance and want to eliminate hepatitis B for hepatitis free future, I think we should provide testing for mother.
Okay. There's this issue of stigma as well when it comes to hepatitis B. How has that impacted patients with who are infected with hepatitis B?
Stigma is very important in viral hepatitis, not just hepatitis B alone. Stigmas can prevent a person to go for testing or access healthcare for treatment. And stigma also can affect some people at work. And we have patients who told us that sometimes they have difficulties in getting insurance as well. So stigmas is very, very unnecessary. And people living with hepatitis B and C should be treated equally.
Okay. Let's come back to hepatitis C. You have mentioned that, you know, the high-risk groups are injecting drug users. And if you've had a blood transfusion or organ transplant before the age of 1994, you probably need to get yourself checked out. As I mentioned earlier, the MOH has announced that only about 1% of Hep C patients have been treated with generics. You were saying outreach programs is also one effective way of educating people for them to come forward and get themselves treated. What are some of the issues facing when it comes to access to treatment? Do you think there's a problem with access?
Access to treatment for me, apart from during the initial stage where there were problems, now is actually not a problem at all. We have good access to medications.
So you feel that the people need to know, people need to get over stigma in order to come forward and get themselves treated?
Yes. First of all, people need to go for testing. And I've mentioned maybe, we need to create more awareness and educations, or even a self-assessment tool. What are your risks? And if you have the risk, do come forward for a simple blood test. And if it's positive, there are good treatment available. And I think the other thing is we should make our health services to be patient-friendly. And I would love to have a place that where people can go for testing with no question asked. We shouldn't be asking, if you had drug injection use before or whatever, before we test you. So, we can make things more patient-friendly and remove any stigma which can be really barriers to testing and treatment.
Do you think we have a long way to go? Because this means everybody along the chain needs to be trained, right from every healthcare provider in the system needs to be trained to understand that there is stigma and that certain things shouldn't be asked. Do you think we have a long way to go?
Perhaps, yes. You're right.
So the available treatment for Hep C at the moment is Sofosbuvir, would you say, is the gold standard right now?
Yes, Sofosbuvir. Sofosbuvir is the backbone for hepatitis C treatment. But it cannot be used on its own. It has to be combined with another antiviral. And in Malaysia, currently is Dacarbazine. And hopefully in the near future, we would also have Remdesivir. So Sofosbuvir has to be combined with another drug. And we have a bit like what you might say, a cocktail to treat hepatitis C. So different agents act on different parts of the hepatitis C virus life cycle. So we can kill the virus effectively.
Any exciting research coming through that you might you know, get you looking forward to?
Yes, in Malaysia, we are actually conducting a research on Sofosbuvir with Remdesivir. As you know, Sofosbuvir is an established and approved drug, but Remdesivir is not. Remdesivir is a new drug, which is not approved in any part of the world yet. And we have done this study in Malaysia on quite a large number of patients, and we have very, very good results. And this combination, so it has data on local population, and it is very good results for our hepatitis C patients based on the genotypes, the types of hepatitis C that we have in our country. And also it is very useful in that it is can be used and initiated very easily without much workup. We do not need to know which type of hepatitis C, and you have type 1 to 6. All you need to know if the patient has mild disease or more severe disease, which is hardening of the liver, in order to decide whether to give 12 weeks or 24 weeks of treatment. And we know this combination is actually very friendly in terms that it has very few drug interactions with other medications that the patients are taking, in particular the medication for HIV. The medication for HIV in Malaysia that we use actually can be combined with Sofosbuvir and Remdesivir, and the side effects are minimal. So I do hope that with this simple treatment, very simple to start, very easy to use and combine with other medications that we use in our population, we can actually treat more patients with very good results.
If 2030 is too ambitious for us to be a hepatitis-free nation, when do you think we would be ready to be a free of a nation that's free of hepatitis?
Well, actually, Malaysia is not alone in this. Do you know that only about 20% of the high-income countries are on track to eliminate hepatitis C by 2030? And another 67% of the high-income countries are off track by about 20 years. So for Malaysia, I think if we scale up treatment, we can still try our very best. We may miss by a few years to achieve this. It does mean that we have to scale up treatment to about 10 to 20,000 patients a year to achieve this. And we have to see if we can sustain that. And there are various calculators. We can look at it and see whether we can, how far off or how near we can in terms of achieving elimination by the year 2030.
Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Tan Sok Siam, a senior consultant hepatologist from Hospital Selayang, this World Hepatitis Day themed a hepatitis-free future. Well, we hope Malaysia will do a lot better. We can always do better, we hope for the best. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Tan.
Thank you. Thank you, Mira.
This is The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.